Hi, I'm Josh, and my drag queen name is Lorda Misrule.
Ooh. And I'm Matt, and my drag queen name is El Conde, which is Spanish for the Frenchman.
Excellent. You Pinochet the hell out of that one. This is Charlie down in Austin. I do really love how, like, the rest of the world will basically say that, like, the English language is, like, the hardest one to learn, and because of all the different things. And I love the idea that, like, the term baghead would be like, well, somebody puts a bag on their head, right? But then, like, head bag is like, that's bad news. You should probably call the cops because, like, there's somebody with a head in the bag. And it's like, but around the rest of the world, they see the phrasing and they wouldn't get why what the issue is there. And I love how it's just like, it's a very, very different thing. Bag in a head, head in a bag. This is very, 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 very different situation that could occur there. I like that. I like it a lot. English is dumb.
Yes, and by the end of this show, we will have been talking about horror movies in the past, present, perfect Presbyterian tense, and this is Horror Show Hot Dog. Before we get into talking about movies, though, I think we should talk about hot dogs briefly, because that is our mandate.
Well, I've heard about that, yes.
Matt, what was the challenge that we have set before us?
So I had interacted with the folks from the Splatterbrains podcast online. I'd posted a comment on an episode of theirs from like a year ago. They did a special on EC Comics, which is near and dear to my heart. And recently they were like, oh my God, we just saw this thing. Sorry. And we chatted a little bit and they checked out our show and mentioned it on their last show. And the obvious question was asked, why the hell is it called Horror Show Hot Dog? Which, of course, we all know. We don't know. And so, but that did raise the question amongst that group of, what if a hot dog eating contest was not based on how many hot dogs you could eat, but if every contestant ate a single hot dog and you were judged on style? And I think that's a great question because it's awesome. So I figured we would all try to come up with our attempt to eat a single hot dog in a manner that would be stylistically pleasing to a, let's say, panel of judges, one of whom will obviously give you a bad score because they're the Russian judge.
They're always late.
See, so picture a mandoline, you know, the thing that slices vegetables into thin little cross sections, right? Mm-hmm. And in between me and the mandoline would be a stamp ink pad of ketchup and a stamp ink pad of mustard. And I would position myself at the far end of that row and reach around and run the hot dog through the mandoline and make it do little tiny slices that go across the ketchup and across the mustard and directly into my mouth.
This is the kind of thing that I may have to field test at work, because I think I have access to all these things.
I wish that actually I'm glad you couldn't see all of the hand gestures I was making there. That was
might really be emotive. Yeah. So I thought about this, and then I figured, you know, I could try to tie this into my like semi-carny background, because I have friends who and myself, I guess, to a degree, have made a bit of a living sometimes by doing strange things to our bodies. I can do things like eat a light bulb or like pound a nail into my nose. But I have other friends who do things that are a little more gastrointestinally related. So I think what I would do, there's a gal I knew out at Fest who did not perform as like a sword swallower or anything like that, like our buddy Salsa did, but had the same thing where you just have to like work through having a gag reflex to be able to manipulate things. And so one of her bits she would do was, when you go out to the festival, much like at a lot of state fairs and stuff, they sell just the big oversized pickles for like a buck or two. And to freak out the kids selling them, she would walk up, order the pickle, get the pickle, and just toss the whole thing down her throat and just kind of hold it in her craw. And so what I think I do is I learn to do that bit. Hot dog contest begins. Grab the hot dog, immediately toss the whole thing down your throat. And everybody goes, well, that's impressively quick, but not that special. But then bring the hot dog back up onto the bun, which while it was in the craw, you've put all the condiments onto the bun. You then put the hot dog back in the bun, consume the hot dog for a second time, which I think makes it twice as hard. So that's my move, is double consuming the same hot dog.
Makes me twice as hard.
Excellent. I don't know. I mean, I thought about this a little bit, but I was like, the last thing I want to do is be all hipstery and snooty about it. That's certainly not my intention by any imagination, but like, it's just one of those things I just haven't really given like a lot of thought to per se, but I would more think about the difference between being like 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, somewhere in that ballpark, and being like consumed by concern about what you look like when you do a thing versus like now where I just couldn't give two shits in a rat's asshole. But the reason why I was thinking about this was when I was up at the festival, the Milwaukee Metal Festival, which was great. It was a lot of fun. They had a bunch of food trucks, and one of the food trucks they had was like a hot dog thing. It was like some person's name was hot dogs or whatever. They had different kinds of things. Food truck stuff, as I'm sure you guys are aware, is like it's just sort of like it's like a contest to see who can put the most shit on a thing, and like it's just like, and so it's usually 15 different ingredients or whatever. But they had some hot dog, and it was had cucumber bits and this thing and some pickled onions and all whatever, and this whole big deal. And I just ate the shit out of that thing. It was great. And it was just, and it's just like I probably had a little mustard on my cheek and this, that, whatever else, and probably looked whatever. But like 17-year-old me, who was would have been just mortified by the thought of anybody actually noticing anything that you're doing at any given point, or being like, or would make fun of you for this, that, whatever. Of course, we grew up in a different era, but still. The difference between 17-year-old me eating that same hot dog and 45-year-old me eating that hot dog, 45-year-old me eating that hot dog was like, that's a good hot dog. That was great. 17-year-old me would have been like, I have to find a dark alcove somewhere and some cutlery and just hope to God nobody sees what I'm doing. Not realizing the great life lesson, which is that most people don't notice what anybody else does.
So your gift is Jack's complete lack of fucks.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like if you're presented with something that somebody has worked on and it's all scratch ingredients and they've combined all these different flavors or whatever else, like you put that in your face without any regard to social decorum. That's style personified.
That is the social contract. Yes.
Beautiful. Well, and I think we can all agree that, you guys know why it's called Horror Show Hot Dog, though, don't you? We've been over this.
I mean, I think so. Maybe.
For those of you who have arrived later than the host of the podcast, we back in the day, Zach Jick Johnson from Kingdom of Loathing started a podcast called Advice Hot Dog, and we're still not sure why he called it that. And then he made one called Video Games Hot Dog, and again, we're not sure why he called it that. And I wanted to get in on it too, so Horror Show Hot Dog was born, and now it's part of the Hot Dog Network, and now I don't think the Hot Dog Network is a thing anymore, but we are the
last dog on the roller.
The sole remaining exemplar of that whole thing.
We do have, I mean, the one, if you want to take one really cool takeaway from any of that, is that like, what's lovely is that, I'm going to embarrass myself, but I think it was Chip that had done some of the designs for...
Yep, the shirts, logo-y stuff.
And he did the Hellraiser one, and he did the Frankenstein one, and a few others. And that was the goddamn coolest thing.
For sure.
And it was so lovely. And whether or not the origin makes any goddamn sense whatsoever, it got us to a point where at a certain point, a very talented sort of Northern Canadian type of a person was making really cool art, and then we got to use it, and it was neat.
Yeah.
So that's more like it's the Canadians we met along the way, I guess.
It's just true of any podcast.
Yes.
So, all right. Anyway, back to our regularly scheduled nonsense.
Let's talk about the spider. Is our short for this week was spider or La Araña.
Is a hero.
This
was making the rounds last week, and everybody seemed to be talking about it.
And we should. It's delightful because it is just like the Sam Raimi Spider-Man condensed, and with him just turning into a Jeff Goldblum in The Fly type monster instead of Spider-Man. But it hits all of the beats.
Grundle Spider.
Right.
Yeah.
Just the getting things stuck to his hands and cannot release them at all was pretty fucking funny. Like, even knowing where this was headed, it still managed to be delightful. And that the creature at the end, like the more human version that just kind of has extra eyeballs and stuff, was agreeably gnarly, I thought.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. Like, this is, I mean, it's not going to probably win any awards for oh, this is the most fucked up, cool, crazy horror thing you've seen. But this is just really cool. So, in case people hadn't heard about it, I thought it'd be worth, worth watching. Cause I certainly thought it was.
I love one of the things I love the most about this was I love the exceedingly breathtakingly dense lawyer language in the credits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I really enjoyed that. I was very tickled by that.
I think there should be some First Amendment lawyer type should propose some kind of amendment that allows you to just go look, but we're just trying to have fun. Don't sue us. And if you just put that on your thing. That supersedes all the other legal language you'd have to use, because that just shows you're not out to no harm, no foul. We're not trying to steal your IP. But wasn't this neat? Can't this just be a thing for a minute?
Yeah, can't we just have a little bit of
look, buddy? No harm, no foul.
Fun in our joyless lives.
I thought this was America.
Well, I thought so. That was that. I appreciated that because I was because the whole time watching this, I'm like, how'd they just. And it's because Chandler, Chandler Riggs is, that's Coral. I mean, it's okay, well, he's, that's cool. And, but it was as I'm watching this, I'm going how they, with the thing. And then I love that I rewound back and read it through a few times. I was I was just so tickled by this dense lawyer language. And I was it's just kind of great. So on the overall, I guess I'll be the detractor, but, I love the idea. I love the concept. I love, taking this thing, kind of doing this thing with it. It's really cool. And in the still moments of this I really like the still moments where the camera calms the ever-loving fuck down. But the action-y bits I thought were pretty poorly shot and edited, and they kind of made my head hurt. Mm-hmm. So the still moments I thought looked great, and I thought it was just production was awesome. But any of the action-y moments where he's running over the buildings and then some of the other cutting backy stuff, it's stop being so twitchy. And so maybe that's just being an old man, but it's just sort of that. So the still parts I loved, but it was the other parts that just kind of was I want to get to the still parts again because I want to stop feeling motion sick.
Okay, well.
But, again, not a huge detractor.
Yeah.
I just very dearly love some of the bits in there. Just the webs all over the room and then out the window, and then you see him do the giddy jump between buildings, and then it just cuts to a bunch of people were found murdered today.
Yeah, there's enough personality moments that come out of that where I was you really there's a level of effort there that's beyond just wouldn't it be fucked up if we just did a shot for shot thing and then just at the end it's boogly, and it's no, they put some thought into it. I thought that was cool.
So, yeah. Hey, let's talk about Lord of Misrule, shall we? Or yes. El Señor de Desgobierno. That guy. Nobody likes that guy.
Yeah, right.
This was the second movie this week, the second movie recently that I've seen Ralph Ineson in, and the second movie that I found it incredibly hard to understand anything he said. But
is he the guy that has the voice like an oak tree?
Yeah, the huge dude, yes.
As the double-reeded. Which I think is the best way to describe him.
Yeah.
So at least this one, watching it at home, I had the ability to look at subtitles. So my experience of him was a lot better this time. I think he's a great presence. It's just I can't fucking understand him. Who could understand him? I couldn't understand him. And you couldn't understand him either. So yeah, just keeps going.
Good Lord.
But this has a little bit of a Wicker Man vibe to it to begin with. And a little bit of a Kill List kind of feeling about it. You have a small town that has a festival every year that maybe is something that, maybe people disappear every once in a while, and It's all very like creepy and very British feeling, because that's, there's enough history over there that there's some real weird dark shit in the history that's now turned into kind of pageantry. So all that is exciting. We also get like the whole festival, including the really cool looking creature that is the Lord of Misrule is the opposite of. But mostly we're following around the vicar of the town, who has only been there like since after last year's festival, and her quest to find her daughter after daughter disappears during said festival and is seen on camera walking off with the, what is it, the Gollawog?
Gollawog, yeah.
The Gagglewaggle?
Addy, addy.
That would have been less intimidating. It's kind of a bye-bye man kind of thing. I thought this was kind of cool in the way that it went all the way with it in a sense, and it didn't end up feeling like stunted the way that Kill List did. No, so I appreciated the way that this went, and it wasn't the direction I was expecting. So what did y'all think?
Yeah, I really liked this quite a bit. I thought this was very well made. And that sequence of the festival where you're like, you just know going in, you're like, okay, well, a bad thing's going to occur. Like you just sort of know. But the way that it kind of just plays around with like where the threat is and what the thing is, and like, is everybody in on it, or are some people in on it, or what's the deal? And that comes up later too as a thing. And I thought the movie had a lot to say about the idea of being like, there's one thing to be like a true believer, dyed in the wool. There's another thing to just sort of be like the way in which you can sort of, if you take a bunch of pheromones and like write your name on a table, and then you like put a bunch of ants there, and the ants go wee, and then froomp, and then they follow the thing. Like, it's not as though like the ants are true believers so much as they're programmed to like follow the pheromones kind of deal. And so like the townsfolk, I really liked about this, a lot of times in folk horror they screw this up where you just get like everybody's a big true believer, and it's like, nah, that's not how it works. There's going to be a lot of sort of people that are just kind of going along with it because they're going to go along with it. And I thought they did a really good job of playing that out in the end. It was really cool. But then that sequence of the little festival thing, it was very ominous and creepy. And they seem to just take a lot of beats, from the Wicker Man kind of a thing without some of the frustration of inertness. Definitely had forward momentum. Yeah, like it keeps its momentum, which I thought was great. It keeps things ambiguous without being so mind-numbingly vague. Kill List, where you're like, just can one fucking thing make sense? Like, just one thing, one person acting like a human.
This did a good job of letting us know that there were things we didn't know, but then also having moments where there were things we knew but our character didn't know. And I think, well, the ones that don't work are when you've got no anchor, but I'd be like, okay, this is fucked, and I think I have a reason to believe that she wasn't part of that conversation. So she's operating without that information. So her actions make sense to me, and what everybody else is doing makes sense to me because I have this omniscient perspective, instead of getting, you know, like, why are these people behaving like this? That's obviously stupid. We all saw the same shit. And those kind of things that kind of, if your movie's not working for you, sort of derail the whole conversation.
Oh, yes.
And this did a good job of making me like, go, okay, I get it. Like, even when I'm watching someone make a mistake, it seemed to make sense in character. This does ask the question, I think, because it does seem, this one aspect does seem familiar from other things. It doesn't bother me in this one or anything, but the idea that, and unless you guys decide I'm misreading this, but the idea that a certain number of people, including her husband, are aware of this kind of thing going on right from the jump, right?
What's her husband?
I think because there's someone getting up, she's getting upset about something or other, and someone leans into him and is just like, it's all right, she'll come around, whatever, or something like that. And my understanding of that was like, okay, he knows this might be a little hinky, and
I see what you mean, I get you.
Like,
so,
and maybe he doesn't know like the level to which it may go, but he's aware that like, okay, she's probably not gonna like this. And like, you get that same thing from other films that have the idea of like some kind of old-timey folklore slash, you know, pagan thing, and there seems to be a idea, even Midsommar kind of does this of like, well, we'll bring in these people that have no idea what's about to happen, that aren't normally involved in this, and we'll hope to just kind of win them over by the end. And that's a weird perspective to take because, like,
unless you're,
it's a pretty short time to sell right. that thing. And the fact that it's ramping up in insanity the whole time is also
true,
not giving people a lot of.
Yeah. Like, if you're a very true believer, maybe you're thinking that you're, like, you're aware.
The scales will fall from their eyes.
Yeah, you're aware enough of it to know that you're going to freak out the straits if you come on too strong right away. But then.
Yeah.
You still believe that what you've got here is valid and real and that you're going to, they're going to see the truth.
Yeah. And that makes it make sense then. Yeah. And that was one of the things I think I mentioned when we were texting about this after we'd all seen it, that this is a really fascinating reverse, like, missionary movie, where, you know, normally you'd have the Christianity, you know, is shoved into a situation where these people have their beliefs or whatever, and then they're, you know, they're challenging it and telling them it's all bullshit and that's really the devil. And here you've got kind of the opposite, where, you know, your Christian person is being told to question everything they believe and gradually kind of just goes native, you know, which is pretty dark and rad.
Well, and that's kind of the neat thing is that they kind of play with that idea of being like, is it a matter of faith or is it a matter of culture? Mm. And it's sort of like, you know, it's just that thing of being like, you know, it's that caricature of Americans where you go travel abroad and the first thing you're looking for is a Starbucks and the second thing you're looking for is a McDonald's or whatever else. And it's like, you know, there's some truth to that, certainly. But it's sort of like it's that balance between these kind of baked in old world kind of old pagany kind of things that they're just taking a little more literally, and then quite literally this like big fuck off monster thing and all the rest of these kinds of things that are all kind of there too. And do they kind of coexist, or there's a kind of a melding in some capacity or other? And it's like, that's a fascinating way to treat kind of this type of folklore, because oftentimes you watch these type of things and it's generally just sort of like everybody is just a wide-eyed twitching 100% believer. And that's one of the things I liked about this, was that some of the townsfolk seem to be like, it's this fun thing that we do. Other townsfolk are like, we're really in this thing. And other people just sort of, there's just these various levels of awareness that is just sort of like the lady when she goes out to get the eggs, and like she sees the vision, or she sees the thing, like kind of like crinkle, crackle, crinkle, prop on the other side, and she generally freaks out. It's like, it's just that somebody who just is not in the upper echelons of this thing, beyond just like, oh, it's our little folklore thing and it's our little culture thing. And it's like, but then like, oh, it's a literal thing. And you're like, oh shit, that's scary. It's a monster. And it's like, and that was cool too, because you don't see that too. Usually it's always all or none.
Right.
And that was another thing that was cool. The other thing I wanted to mention about this, so I don't forget, is this title. I was curious, so I went and did a little bit of poking around. And as it turns out, this is a thing. I don't know if you guys knew this thing, but it was a thing. But what I love is that in Scotland, instead of being Lord of Misrule, it's referred to as the Abbot of Unreason.
Ooh, I like that.
Also good.
Which is great. And basically, like, the way that what I understood from what I did, the little poking around, was that, like, it was basically like this. It was a person, or in or outside of the church, who was in charge of like all the. You know, Christmas time things and the parties and the events and the revelries and things and whatever. And so, like, it, in the context of this movie, it's like it kind of makes a lot of sense, because you're like, okay, well, this is the offshoot of this thing, the gaping maw on the ground that you got to feed a child to every little bit of time, every 12 years or so. And it's like, so they're both a thing. Like, oh man, like, all right. So they were doing this thing, but they also realized that there's this other thing going on. And the best part about that, and Ralph Ineson, like, his little monologue, and she, Tuppence Middleton, who, by the way, if you've not seen her in anything else, like, seek her out in everything that she's in, because she's always great. She's fantastic in Fisherman's Friends, which I love so dearly. It's such a wonderful movie. She was in Black Mirror. She's been in a bunch of stuff, and she's always excellent. But I love when he does his whole little shtick, his whole little monologue about the coming of this and this thing and the great amount of prosperity and whatever else. And she's like, what are you fucking kidding me? What prosperity are you talking? What great gifts? Look around, dipshit. It's just like any other village. What's wrong with you? Like, you're not getting anything for your investment. Like, I was like, what is wrong with you? Like, and I thought that was rad. Because that is always that thing. And it was plenty of them that I like. But that's always the thing with these type of movies where you're like, and you've come upon this village. The village has bountiful fruit. And all the women are super foxy. And all the dudes are like, speak five languages, but also all look like, you know, like Mark Ruffalo, and you're like, well, fuck, so what the hell's in the water out here? And it's like, oh, well, it's this thing. We sacrifice a person to the gaping maw, and then everybody is foxy and smart. And it's like, but that wasn't the case. It was like any other village.
Yeah.
And I love that she called bullshit on that in that very literal kind of way. And it's like, ah, it's great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Because you just don't see that kind of thing where you just like, usually it's either it's all fake, like a la Scooby-Doo, or it's like super, super real. Like the one with Barbara Hershey, the one with the old folks home.
The relic, but not the one with the giant monster. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that one where it's sort of like, they're like, well, we're doing this thing. And it's like, and the guy was going to die anyway, and then we get to be youthful, and it's dope. You want to join? And then she's like, well, you make a good point. And it's like, and so it's always either one or the other. And so it's like, it's kind of cool to have this like, this thing be kind of like in the middle where it's sort of like, you're not trying to call it out like a hoax a la Scooby-Doo, but it's not just all magical. Everything is real. Like, that's kind of a cool balance. That's like, and I just think that whoever this director for, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Like, this dude did an amazing job. Was William Brent Bell, I guess, who also directed The Boy and Where and a couple other things. This guy seems to really understand the idea of just letting shit breathe. Because, like, there are definitely some moments in this that really sneak up on you a bit. Where they're but
never,
not jumping
never
boogly.
Dull, just patient, though.
Yeah, yeah, like, you're just letting stuff kind of build out. Because you got the manicness of the mom. And, like, you know, kind of trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And you're getting bits and pieces. And you're building it forward. And you're like, who's in on it? Who's not in on it? And, like, but it never sits back to just marvel at itself for long stretches of time.
They also never play her shrill.
No,
that was another
really
thing.
Really nice, too. Yeah, they just go, oh, no, she's understandably very upset and doing what she can. But never is like, oh, there's that woman being a crazy woman. Like, that never goes there either, like, as part of the plot or even just as part of the shitty filmmaking that you sometimes see. Like, it was pretty refreshing to go, yeah, like, I can fully get behind her in every scene, even when she's doing something that might not be the smartest possible move based on her information.
Yeah,
I'm really glad you mentioned that. That's really glad you mentioned that, because that's another thing about her, that, like, the scene where everybody's bringing the food into the house or whatever else, you fully expect her character to just lose her shit and yell at everybody, and she just kind of goes, like, what in the shit? And just, like, removes herself. And he's like, God, that's great.
I like her, but also then, like, that the villagers aren't just all completely ominous and off-putting.
Yes.
Like, we've seen movies where the person walks in and everybody stink eyes them. And you just go, okay, we get it. Yes, they're bad. Yes, the score is going crazy behind it. And everyone is, like, their behavior is within the bounds of reason right up until it isn't. And, like, the old ladies in the church scene when she comes in and they're, like, part of the cult meeting, and she's just like, you guys too. And they're like, yeah, sorry, like, you're great and we are still the same people, but Galawag has plans for us all, you know. And so I dig that they're just the same, like, quiet, sincere people. Their eyeballs don't go black or anything. And I also really like that idea of the festival has the kind of Satan figure in the Galawag, and then the Lord of Misrule drives them away. And they're like, no, that's the version that the church made to make it more compatible with, you know, the Anglican religion. Is
right.
It really is that Galawag is just the spirit of everything that is bigger than God. And any, you know, if God and the devil had a boxing match, Manol would be the stadium, you know, that guy. And I dig that seems to be what it is by the end. He's not necessarily evil. He's just primal.
Yeah.
And I really dig that idea.
Yeah, it's more of an elemental thing.
No,
yeah.
You dumb son of a bitch. He didn't want to steal your kid. He wanted you to come get your kid.
Yeah, I like that too.
And she doesn't say, like, and I know that, like, because
you
I'm
didn't
a mother
go, like, full
or anything. Yeah, she's just like,
yeah,
you misunderstood that. This basic problem is sometimes it's not clear what your God is asking of you, and you failed the test. And now you have this, you've built this whole very conservative fire and brimstone religion around your misinterpretation. And folks, for some reason, that resonated with me. I like it a lot.
It does.
Yeah, just a little bit there. It does. Yeah, all in all, I mean, I thought this was a really cool, just an excellent way to kind of like lay out a lot of interesting folklore-y things, but then just avoiding so many mistakes. Like, as much as I love folklore, a lot of times it can just either feel like a recitation in a 400 level anthropology class where you're just like prying your eyes open a la Clockwork Orange to try to stay awake, even though the subject matter is interesting, it's just so extraordinarily boring. So it's not that, but it's also not the opposite way where it just becomes this bombastic, silly thing, which, I mean, those can be fun. I am the very first person to stand up and say, you know, Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters rules, and I think it's great, but it's like not everything can be that either. So like striking that balance of making something engaging and interesting and dark and eerie and kind of a mystery, but without falling in any of those pitfalls is quite a magic act. So I give him a lot of credit for balancing this thing in a really cool, really cool way. This is a neat, nifty little movie.
Groovy. Yeah, I would say overall this is a good 8 out of 10 in my book. We'll call it 8 out of 10 very tall and very sinister dudes.
Nice. Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. I would also give it an 8 out of 10. Really compelling all the way through. Doesn't fall into the usual pitfalls of people either being kind of, as we talked, like cartoonishly sinister or so laid back in their approach that it's kind of dull. This just kind of hooks you and keeps you going the whole time. And really compelling performances certainly help that. So yeah, this is a great deal of fun. So yeah, 8 out of 10. Oh, I don't know about you guys, but I was definitely like watching as the actors came out for the little pantomime and looking at that dude's scythe and being like, is this going to be one of those things where we find out that like they replaced the fake scythe with a real one? Because that blade looks spooky. Turns out. Yep. Yep.
As it turns out, it super totally is. Yeah, I think I'm going to go a little bit higher. I'm going to say 8.5 out of 10 as a real lover of kind of folk horror stuff. I really love it when somebody gets the balancing act right and really makes a kind of a compelling, interesting thing. I almost think in a way it could have even been a little bit darker without sacrificing its good pacing and balance, but on the whole it's a nifty little deal and great performances by the leads. And like I said, go find anything that our lead in this, her name is Tuppence Middleton, and if you just want to feel great about life, watch her movie Fisherman's Friends, about the real Fisherman's Friends from Wales, these the singing fisherman guys who this record producer found, and then the culminated with a performance on the pyramid stage at Glastonbury, if you can believe it. It's a movie about them, and it's really wonderful. The music is great, and it's awesome, and it's lovely, and life affirming, and warm, and great. But she's great in that. She's great in fucking everything. So yeah, so I'll say 8.5 out of 10. 8.5 out of 10. Well, I don't remember this other part of this festival being in the TripAdvisor review that I read.
I am so giving them a bad Airbnb review. Just because modern stuff in ancient times.
Because modern stuff sucks.
But look what we have. What wonders we have for you. We have illegal hotel, illegal taxi service. Anyway, we'll take a quick break and pee and fight the revolution, and then we'll be back. So up next, let's devote a few minutes in the coveted middle slot to El Conde, or The Count. The reason I wanted to watch this is because it has the logline of what if Augusto Pinochet, the brutal dictator of Chile, was not in fact dead and was an immortal vampire and had been since he was 20 years old in the 1600s. And I went, ooh, I wonder what they're going to do with that. And I'm not sure that even now I understand what they're going to do with that. I keep going back to like, this is what would happen if Wes Anderson made a horror movie. because everyone already knows what's going on with everybody else, so there are no surprises. But at the same time, everyone is completely unflappable. It's like, oh yes, well, he went out and ate some hearts. Well, he ate that guy's heart. Well, you know, he's eating this heart over here. And yeah, whatever.
Does it offend you when we argue like this? No, I like watching people be awful to each other. It exposes their true nature and what kind of awful people they are. So please continue. Thank you very much. Yeah, Michelle. And like, what?
Nobody ever goes, that's not the way. It's just like, yeah, of course. Why wouldn't the nun we hired to... Well, the nun that one of us hired to kill Vampire Father, but Vampire Father wants to die, but we hired this lady to kill the vampire because she's a nun, and then I told the rest of the family that she is an accountant that's going to help us get the money that Dad has stashed all around the world, even though she acts like a cop who is trying to find all of the... like all the missing money before she turns them in, right? Like
the money. Yeah.
And yet at the same time that all of these levels of intrigue are going on, everyone's just kind of deadpanning at each other. So like, I don't know, when I feel like a movie is shrugging at me, I tend to shrug back. Like this is Asteroid City all over again for me. I can see that this is a well-made movie and it's a damn strange movie. So I can see why critics were enamored of it, but boy, I didn't vibe with this at all.
I don't know how to put this. So like the story that they're telling is very simple, really, despite being like that kind of high concept elevator pitch. It is just sort of like, okay, like old vampire kind of ran out of fucks to give and squabbly children want to be rich and taken care of for life.
Out-ish.
And then, yeah. And so it's just like, okay, so that's pretty simple. And that there are no wrinkles in that. You're right. There's no surprises in this. And that all sort of plays out in sort of an unexpected way, but not like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. But in just like, oh, that's a weird take and it's not very interesting. What I do think works is visually, a lot of times this film is very arresting. The initial scene of our dictator come vampire come old guy just kind of flying in a very old like Superman serial way of like just kind of holding your cape out to fly.
Yeah, and the rear projection, you know, is on all the flying. Yeah,
is like oddly like retro and nostalgic and kind of beautiful. And then when you get the version where once the nun, oh, by the way, because I'm a How Did This Get Made listener, I'm going to say she was nundercover. She gets bit and she steps out of the house and essentially does the Arthur Dent of like throw yourself at the ground and miss kind of flying and just sort of tumbles like the fluff off of a dandelion all around like the town and the farm and the yard. And you're just like, God, that's gorgeous. And it's in stark contrast to his pedestrian flight that is of a man who doesn't give a shit about the beauty of that. And no longer feels any exhilaration to her sense of complete wonder and not even caring if she's looking where she's going. Cause she's just sort of going to flounce about and bounce off of things like a beach ball. And you just go, God damn, that's gorgeous. And it's filmed really well and everything. And so you get these moments that you're just like, oh, and you sort of sit up and pay attention. But then in between that is just sort of a lot of people murmuring dialogue at each other, being a little snarky.
Yeah.
And that's not as interesting to me as I think they thought it would be.
Well, it's so dry. That's the thing that like is interesting. Cause like, you know, this fellow, the guy who directed this, Pablo Larrain, he's the guy who did The Club, which I think I'm pretty sure I mentioned to you guys before The Club, but that was the one where it was like, I saw a Fantastic Fest and there wasn't a lot of data about it. And as you're watching it, it's like this like nursing home for like old priests. And oh, it's yeah, like a, kind of in the secluded area. And then like, as it's kind of building out, you realize like, oh, this is where they put all the child molesters and all the rapists and stuff. And they're like, this is all the old ones that are all there. And it's like, fuck. And it's sort of like, and it's, I still think about that feeling of walking out of that theater, just being like, But then he also did Naruto, which was really good. And then he's the one who directed that Natalie Portman, Jackie Onassis movie back a while ago. So it's like, so he's got like, and he also did the one about Princess Diana, the one that was like that brief, very, very specific woman in time one. He did that one too. And so like, he's got a feel for look and feel and like an atmosphere and those kind of things. And I would definitely say this has like a lot of atmosphere to it and like has a lot of feel to it for sure. But like the deadpanness, I think if everybody didn't sort of kind of seem like the same person, in like, because you have the very beginning where you have like the narration of the young Pinochet and then disguising himself and watching Marie Antoinette and this, that, whatever, and all this kind of stuff. Then you fast forward into this like very Grey Gardens sort of meets the Manson family kind of thing, and you're like, and that goes on for several hours, and it's sort of like, so I don't know, it's like the deadpanness is fine, but it's like it would work a lot better if it was like in much more small bursts versus these very long kind of things where like it's intercut with like stark violence, yeah. Like very kind of brutal shit. I mean, like,
you know what it made me think of in an unflattering way? It was watching Poor Things, which not everybody that I've recommended it to has loved as much as I did. And I think I can... I think I can see how these guys were sort of trying to make the same thing where you're like, okay, you've got this bonkers concept and then you go about it in an almost mundane way with these gorgeous visuals, except that like there's philosophy that happens in Poor Things. And when it's trite, it's because the character's an infant and like it tells a larger story. And this one, I don't know that it had a larger story or lesson to try to tell.
No, just that there's,
and I don't know if that's a fair comparison or not.
And also like, this is, I'm sure that there are notes that I'm not picking up on just because I don't know much about Chilean Pinochet's reign or any of that. But I mean, there is the upper class literally feasting on, you know, subsisting on the oppressed people, right? Like there's that angle and how they have such disdain for the commoners and their common blood, but they have to make do, and how both of them are like very brutal in their outlook on the world. Like, oh, by the way, we get Margaret Thatcher in at the end of this as Pinochet's mom. As like you do. And like, I admire that, but at the same time, that does also suck the air right out of it as a movie in order to make it better as a metaphor. So it's a slight bummer.
Yeah.
Well, that was another thing too, Josh. You kind of just real fast. You said the thing about like kind of the picking up on some of the notes. I think that is kind of that is important because like we oftentimes will, you know, mention how important it is to like, you know, see things from different cultures and like, you know, maybe we don't pick up on everything in kind of Korean kind of, you know, land politics or some Japanese thing or some Russian thing, or, you know, there's stuff we're not going to get, you know, and that's okay. And you kind of go along with that. And I think this falls in the same category. But that being said, like, the whole thing with like this being your central character and like imbibing all of this vampire folklore into the thing, it's like, you know, Pinochet the dude, like, you know, it's like, you know, we propped him up and then he was just like, I'm a dictator. Yeah. And like, and it's sort of like, and so then taking that and then putting it through vampire folklore is interesting, but I also don't know, as an American that doesn't know a ton about it, it's like, I kind of go like, like, I think you're going for the funny, but like, I don't know.
Well, it's like, I feel like the forensic accounting that's being done is meant to illustrate the kinds of horrible things that were happening in real life, right? Yeah. It's like, whenever they interview the kids about where this money came, oh, so he was actually taking money from these people and putting it in his own pockets. And he's like, yeah, right, because otherwise these assholes would have stolen it. So you're saying he was not as bad because he was stealing it before they could. And he's like, yeah, obviously. And it's like, yes, this is like, in its way, satirizing like the idea of like these people thinking they're the good guy the whole time. But like, at the same time, none of us know if satire is real or not.
So, yeah.
Is it working or isn't it? I don't know. I can tell you I wasn't particularly entertained for what that's worth. But like, so in a way you get a history lesson in like this backhanded way. And I was like, I bet these are all things I could look up and kind of go, yes, this is sort of correlating, but like, I don't know that it then told me what it thought about it, much less gave me a way to think about what I thought about it.
Oh, yeah.
But that could just be dumb American.
Oh, yeah. Like with our nun character, she has so many layers of deception that I wasn't sure when we finally landed on something, if we were finally at what is she really wanted. Because she's like pretending to be the accountant. She's pretending to be the exorcist. Her goal is to get vamped and then kill him. But she doesn't seem to feel like killing him after she gets vamped. It seemed like that her whole goal was to become a vampire. And they're like, no, but because the church wanted her to become a vampire so that she could defeat him and have the strength to, but none of that really plays.
And if she could find a way to get any bearer bonds back.
Yeah, like, none of this really plays into the denouement much either. Like her character is so huge and then she's just kind of offed. And it's weird how this just refuses to take flight as a movie, even though, you know, people are flying around within it. It's like if Jim Jarmusch and Wes Anderson came together for a movie. They're like, this is going to be black and white and very droll and deadpan and kind of loosey goosey. And like, okay, if you must. You know, that's
fine. Yeah, it's the dryness that kind of like, because there are moments in this that are quite something and they're amazing to look at, and there's just moments of just abject violence and just sort of like all kinds of, you know, juicy things in there, but it is just sort of bookended at every opportunity but just sort of whoa. And so, and I get that that's part of the humor, and I get that if I had some deep roots in what they're laying out, I would kind of get what they're, you know, getting at in a much more intimate sort of way, which I, you know, so I totally recognize that. That being said, like, what was it? What's his, oh my God, the name, I just had the name and it fell out of my fucking head. Guy who directed, Death of Stalin. Mm-hmm. Golly, Jim Lickers. Let's see. That one is one of those ones. That's a great bellwether, because like that one is one of those ones where I just thought it was so goddamn funny, and because Iannucci, Armando Iannucci. Mm-hmm. There we go. Jesus Christ. He's quite the character. And Death of Stalin is like you have all these character actors from all different walks of life, Americans included. And you have some of them, like, was it Steve Buscemi's in there? And he just plays Steve Buscemi, basically, which is great. And he's Khrushchev, but he's just like, hi, how's it going? It's like, and you have Rupert Friend's in there. Jason Isaacs is in it. And like, it just like the cast goes on for Jeffrey Tambor's in there and every fucking person you can think of. But it's played very droll and very deadpan, but I just found it so funny, and I thought it was hilarious. But other people watch that movie, they're like, this is 15 hours long, and I'm not laughing at the things that I'm supposed to be laughing at. And it's like, so I definitely get, you know, it's like, and certainly I don't live in the UK or Russia, so I don't have the same connections. But like, I found it really funny. So sometimes it's just a matter of like, I guess it's a matter of the delivering, I guess. Oh, yeah. You know, I don't know. I don't know. It's just one of those things that is how it's going to reach you, I guess.
Since you brought up again that it's dry, when we were talking about that the first time, I wrote this sentence. This movie is so dry, it makes a Popeye's biscuit look like Cardi B's pussy. And I'm very happy that I had that thought.
Yeah, this is why you get paid mm-hmm, the big bucks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one of those weird ones where like this is not a piece of garbage, and this is not like critics being fooled into thinking it's good. It's like I get that there is a lot going on here, and I can see why people would enjoy it and celebrate it. It just did not manage to land those connections with me, especially just the way that the story played out. I think I wanted a whole lot more for the nun character than how sidelined she got. But yeah, anyway, for me, this is still like a 4 out of 10. He is my generals, and my general direction.
Oh boy. I'll perhaps confusingly give it a 5 because I sort of want to be right down the middle of the road on this one where, like, I know it didn't really work for me mostly, with the big exception being some of the visuals, most especially like the flying scenes and stuff. But I also, I don't know if that's just like, this isn't calibrated for me, and the fact that it's not my flavor isn't that surprising. So yeah, I don't know. I just kind of don't know what to think about it exactly. I know that from it was largely kind of sort of a passive viewing of like, okay, we'll see. And then sort of over. I'm not mad at it. I don't know. Maybe I just didn't quite get it, or I don't know enough about it. So I'm hesitant to be too down on it. So yeah. If the concept sounds interesting and we didn't make you want to run screaming from it, you might find that you'll have more to unpack there and you'll find something interesting. But for me, it was just sort of eh. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to be kind of the timing on the totem pole again, I guess. I mean, it's very hard to digest as a movie because, like, it is, yeah, it's just these endless sequences of just sort of like, whoa. But just the overall craft of it and the look of it and some of the sequences and some of this, the abject violence and just kind of like, it's like Jesus Christ. That I found to be very engaging and fun. And I really quite liked a lot of that stuff. So even though it's like, it does feel massively disjointed, there's a lot of beauty to be had for sure. At least I think so. And maybe, you know, maybe this is one of those ones I would watch again at some point and then kind of pick up on more of the humor. Maybe not. You know, I don't know if this is the show I want to revisit again, but I appreciated enough of the dryness that it kind of gave me that, like, vaguely Iannucci kind of vibe to it. So, you know, like I said, I'll be the high man of the totem pole, which is going to be, not real high necessarily, but I would say like a 5.5, like a 5.5 out of 5.5 out of 10. 5.5 out of 10. You just can't have a vampire with the two front ones and not be like the.
That's like a little.
It's just like I always hate it, but every time I see it in something, I just go.
Oh, you're a little vampire rabbit.
I'm the deadliest bunny wabbit.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like.
I'm hunting vampires. <It's like>
Yeah. Out of 10. That's hard to do with your face.
I mean, I try to do at least one thing that's hard to do with my face every day.
There you go.
But I know who does, and that person is Baghead or Cabeza de Bolsa, maybe? Yeah? No.
That works.
So Baghead is about a young woman who finds out that her absentee father has died and left her his combination pub and like apartment, which is great because she is like refreshingly directionless slacker who is also a lady. That doesn't happen a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing, yeah. Amazing concept.
So that's great. So she's kind of a mess, and so she goes to the inn, and she is more than willing to kind of stick it out past where anyone else would when she finds out that there is a creature that lives in the inn, in the basement, and you can have it channel your dead relatives, but if you do it for too long, then it turns evil. It's kind of like if Talk to Me had like a person instead of just a disembodied hand a bit.
Yeah.
Except yeah. They can talk to people who they genuinely care about. It's not just a random person. But then after 2 minutes, they're going to go all, right. You know, triple track voice and black eye contacts. I don't know. And this to me, this like kind of went in one eye and out the other. The location is great. I feel like the people are fine.
Sure.
It's just, it doesn't hit. And I think it's just got too many tropes in it for me to sit up and take notice.
I think coming out after Talk to Me did this movie no favors. It's close enough conceptually, despite the kind of differences around the edges. And there are plenty of films and TV shows and whatnot that have some sort of possession thing where, you know, I mean, even like Evil Dead, like, that's not your sister anymore. It's the Deadite thing, right? But they start talking to you with the voice of the person mm-hmm. that you loved. Except that this one, you're not even starting with the real person, yeah. right? You're starting with a monster with a bag on its head. And the fact that every single person still listens to it past the 2 minute mark when someone else is shouting, it's not really them. Like, but I find what they're saying so compelling. I'm sure this time it's her, despite watching like six other people get killed for doing the exact same thing. It's like, what?
Because it gets in.
We need to find.
It manipulates you too, though, yeah.
But just by saying stuff, and I guess it's supposed to have some kind of insidious effect on your brain, but like, I don't know. It's just really unsatisfying to watch people forget the only mm-hmm. rule. Like, just, I guess, are we going to have a clever way around that? And like, yeah, a little bit of a hand wavy thing, but mostly just nah. Just someone yelling at you how, you know, don't do it. And they go, but I should. And then I just found that to be really frustrating. Yeah. In kind of the opposite way of what I was talking about with the Lord of Misrule, where it's like, oh, people are maybe making not smart decisions, but I understand and can follow along with them to see what happens. And this is one I'm like, you guys are being idiots and I'm mad at you. You're Friday the 13th.
Well, my major complaint is still just, so at like 2 minutes of sweet talk, then they get one more sentence that's kind of nice, and then the person gets like Deadite voice and makeup and stuff, but continues to talk as yep. though they're the person, only they're saying the most horrible things that you and everyone hear. And then people are going, that's not you. You're not her. And like, yes, that's very clear because they look mm-hmm. and talk completely different now and they're monstrous. And if it was just, if there were just no change in their demeanor or tone or makeup and nothing, and they just suddenly are saying horrible things, then that makes a lot more sense for why that would.
If they were just applying like Midwestern guilt or yeah. something, and you're like, oh man, that cuts deeper because she's just disappointed in you. Like that would make sense that you'd sit there because you've just been belabored with it your whole life. Like and you'd feel like shit. And then eventually it could win you over.
Like how the Annabelle doll is just fucking terrifying looking. And nobody would ever take yeah. that doll and bring it into their house. You know, it doesn't look like a toy that a kid would have. And it, so in the same way, like, this doesn't work. Like, that's not my wife. She sounds like Linda Blair. Like, nobody is going to fall for that shit. I don't know. So,
Well, and I also kind of like the... one of the things I did like about this, I think it had some things going for it, but it was one of the things I did really like about it was that it seemed to understand the idea of like taking your main character, and it's not necessarily that they have a big higher purpose per se. It's sort of more like they're going to behave kind of like humans are going to behave a lot of times, which is going to be like, I got my own problems, and this is a situation that I've not necessarily, you know, signed up for, and I got some other baggage to deal with this, whatever. And I just kind of, I really enjoyed that they kind of like made her not like, oh, she sucks, but not like, oh, she's this virtuous hero among heroes. It was more just sort of like, she behaves the way a lot of people would, and the way of being like which the thing she's saying with her friend, played by, was it Ruby Barker, who's from Bridgerton, was like, she says, you know, the whole thing about like, yeah, but he gave me like $4,000. Like that was,
yeah, like, I really need the money.
Yeah. She has a relatable reason to not run screaming into the night. Because no harm has come to her yet. And she's going, I mean, honestly, if someone was like, yeah, if I could make $4,000 a night to just let someone talk for 2 minutes, I'd probably be willing to give that a test run or two.
Well, that I really dug. And then, but then also this did do the thing that I love dearly, which is that like in any thing that's supernatural, not necessarily with things of nature, like a spider or like a bear or some other kind of natural thing, but like, you know, any kind of supernatural kind of deal where you go like, oh, here are the, these are the rules. And you go like, And you go like, well, who says that the thing's going to like follow the rules necessarily? Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, it's like, oh, but they're the rules that, that have been established. Like, established by whom? Because that's the thing that seems to happen in these type of things where like we have a rule, you see, and you go, okay, well your rules, well, we're safe because of the rules. And this is like, don't you think that this thing would have a little bit of a grudge, a little bit of a chip on its shoulder, and would maybe use every opportunity to free itself of said situation? And it's sort of like no, but there are rules. Like, ah, yes, that is cute.
And then it doesn't really, by the end of it, it doesn't seem to be operating by any recognizable rules. Right.
Yeah, it does kind of say, like, I'm sort of pissed about this whole situation. Fuck you.
Well, it kind of, but it uses that, it uses the kind of, it uses humanity against them, basically.
Yeah.
Like, that was, and that's what I really dug, because it's like, you know, they keep, you know, talking about like, well, we can do this, or we can't do this, or we can do this thing, or we can get it to do this, we can get it to that, or whatever else. The idea being that it was just, it's like a piece of broccoli. Like, it's sort of like, oh, we just sort of move it around, and then it's got a broccoli, and we don't have to worry about it doing anything else besides just being broccoli. And you're, and meanwhile, it's sort of like, I am not broccoli. And
the broccoli's turning into like the head from the thing and skittering away.
Yeah, and it's like, and I dug the shit out of that, because that is great, because often, so often in these things, and you know, if you're raised on a steady diet of science fiction movies and comic books, it's sort of like you get a very, very strong sense of, this is how this works, and this is how this doesn't work, and this must follow the rules, and this does not follow the rules, and canonically it's this, and canonically it's that, or whatever else. And it's like, what I really do enjoy when some kind of bad entity of some kind or other will just sort of like can kind of take that construct and sort of use it against you. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy that. I think it's great.
All this talk of the rules is reminding me of one of my favorite gags from rewatching Archer recently, which is someone jolts back awake and someone else grabs a stake to stab him in the heart. And someone stops and then goes, he's not a vampire. And they yell, the stake doesn't care. Yeah. You know, like, yeah, maybe the rules don't matter as much as we think in every situation.
And then the Peter, you know, Peter Merlans, and there's, I was mentioning in the text, which is like, we're having this theme this week of gravel honeyed voiced dudes. Cause like, yeah. Peter Merlan, who like, if you, he's another one, like, seek him out in everything. Most, the one that I just, for my lifetime, I'll always think of him for, you know, he's been in a ton of stuff. He was in Children of Men, and he's in a bunch of other things, but the one I always think of him being in is in the Red Riding trilogy. And he is just arresting in those ones. If you've not seen them, I recommend them so incredibly highly, the Red Riding series. But I also fully would say too that they're not easy, because it involves, like, you know, some very heavy church doing bad stuff, child murder, some real, it's heavy, it's real heavy, but they're fucking incredible movies. Because it was a TV series, quote unquote, but they're basically three movies. And he plays this priest in it, and he's fucking unbelievable in that. And it's just like, for as long as my days, like, I'll always think of certain scenes that, from Red Riding, where it's just, he's unfucking believable. So anyway, it was great to see him pop up in this, and he has got just presence at the Wahoodie. But what was kind of sad was that, like, yeah, he's really great in that whole monologue he gives on the video thing, where he just sort of says like, well, we, you know, you expect it's going to be this, but you've already lost this because of this. He's like just laying it out. And then this is like, because it's a movie, they're not going to necessarily listen to the parts you don't want to listen to, and they don't really pay attention. But the bummer of it was that I really think that the movie could have been really served by having more of Peter Milan in, like, real time, and, like, having some more back and forth there. Because I think about the piece de resistance of, like, we've got rules, and then demon monster thing being like, fuck your rules, is in Autopsy of Jane Doe, yeah. Like, in how unbelievably great that is, mm-hmm. and how tense and how dicey and great that movie is. And it's like, this could have used more of that, where, like, there was a little bit more every time. Because, like, every day people keep going down the basement and says, oh, don't cross the basement, or else people just running up and down the basement, like, just bebopping around, like, no problemo. And it's like, versus, like, Autopsy of Jane Doe, where the whole second half of that movie, you're like, don't go anywhere. Don't pick up anything. Don't look at that. Don't go over there. Yeah. Don't do nothing. And like, and this didn't have enough of that, where there was enough of that kind of foreboding and that kind of danger. And I think it really could have used that, because like there's a little bit of it, and there's definitely some good moments, but it could have used more of that fear factor. Mm. And this just doesn't, because, and Josh, you pointed this out in other movies, and I think rightfully so, where if there's too much dream logic, where you're going too much far back and forth, you can always pull something back. And so then it just makes things not as scary or engaging, because you're like, I mean, at any point, they can just go, and then this kind of has that too, where they're like, oh, there's a crazy vision. Oh, there's this thing. Oh, you saw this thing happened, whatever. And it just, but you just sort of take it back. And it's like, ah, man. And so it's sort of like, there's too much of that, I think, where if they just had dialed into the fear of it, I think it probably would have clicked a lot better. Cause man, that sequence where her friend goes down to the basement and then bar guy's there and he starts telling her all this stuff, and he goes, wait a minute. Are you the guardian? And she's like, no. And he's like, oh, that's unfortunate. Yeah. And it's sort of like, that was great. That was awesome. Like more of that thing of being like, oh shit. Like that, more of that, because it had definitely had the capacity for it. Just like I said, every time they kept jaunting down to the basement, it's just like, it didn't feel like those scenes in Jane Doe where they're just so fucking tense. And so you pull back on that throttle and it just makes it kind of putter down, and then you're just, it's more, it's no different than any kind of police procedural or anything else, where you just sort of like, well, I just want to get to the part where you explain where the murder weapon went to, and then like that's what we'll get to that point, and like cool, and then we're done. And it's like, and so that's kind of what I mean. It's like, it just, I think it had a lot going for it. It just took the foot off the gas so frequently, where like, to your point, Josh, the kind of black eyed thing kind of really would bug you. And I think if they had really kept up the atmosphere and focused less on that part of it, then maybe that stuff doesn't even, it just kind of zips by. But also to your old point that like, if you had not done the Deadeye makeup thing and just kept it just straight, like
yeah,
that works even better. Like, was that one that I loved, that one a few years ago, was it Last Shift? Mm-hmm. Like one jives, because not only is it like real time stuff, and it's not just fucking with being awake or asleep or dreams or hallucinations, but it's the real shit, the real person, the real thing you're looking at. And then it just goes, no. And you're just like, oh, God damn it all. And so like, that is a real, there's a power to that. And so, yeah, when you kind of let the viewer off the hook a little bit, when you apply the Deadeye makeup or the eyes or the freaky deaky voice, like if you reserve that just for a few moments, then yeah, it probably becomes a lot more powerful, because it does have enough atmosphere that it could definitely click for sure. So I don't know, it's just, you know, all that being said, I mean, there's still a lot that I did like about this. It just sort of felt like they were too okay with being in second gear a lot of the time, it felt like.
Yeah, and just like the other part of not knowing if something's real is that by the time you realize that it was real, you've lost the opportunity to be affected by it. Like,
yep.
When friend gets dragged off and then we see friend's body and our actor is horrified, but I'm going, yeah, but is that really her? Or are we going to do the thing at the end where, you know, everything gets undone? And so I was just kind of hesitating to invest any emotional energy into the story, because
yeah, if you're always waiting for one more gasping,
had no idea if
to tell you
she was really dead until very much later on, when like the credits are rolling, like, oh, I guess she was dead. Okay, well.
Well, and that one loses a lot of its punch, because that one could have worked beautifully as just a very simple, mean, sinister little motor scooter. But, and I hate even saying this out loud because I feel like it's too mean, but like the makeup that they did on her when she finds the body or whatever, like it made me think that was
fake.
That was the thing. Like it almost felt like that was going to be part of the gag.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And, and you're like, oh no.
And it wasn't, but it was so distracting. And I'm sure that they were trying to get across a certain thing. And I'm sure that was for part of the plan. And you know, I'm confident that's what they were trying to do, for, you know, for of course, but it really robbed that thing of a great feeling. Because, like, Bar Guy, the makeup on Bar Guy, like, that's great because it's, like, it's subtle. It's not, like, he doesn't look like he's dressed up to, like, you know, do his Darkthrone cosplay or something. Like, he just looks like he's jacked up. Like, but it's, like, in a kind of subtle sort of way. Like, ah, it's great. And so they just don't do that with that one, and it really robs that scene. It's like, man. Like she's got the thing that Stephen King got in Creepshow.
Oh, poor old Jordy Verrill. We hardly knew you. Yeah, this is like I wasn't mad at it, and I had some fun with it throughout. But towards the end, it just kind of slowly collapsed like a flan in a cupboard, as Eddie Izzard says. So for me, it's like a 6, maybe 6.5 out of 10. Look, just give it a different bag. It's the burlap that's making it so mad. Like, you know, like a velvet bag, like a Crown Royal bag, only head sized, you know, something. Crying out loud.
Yeah, I got to go a little lower. Yeah, I don't know. I think the easy comparison to Talk to Me, you know, fair or not, it was like the first thing my brain latched onto. And then once I had that, like, as a terrier with a slipper, I just couldn't let it go the whole time. And it just sort of like made me be like, there's a way to make this movie in a way that works for me. And this movie kept making decisions that didn't really work. And so, like, I'm not like particularly like incensed at it. I don't think it was like dumb or trying to like talk down to its audience. It just kind of didn't click. So I bet, like, again, and also like trying to keep in mind that we've watched a bajillion horror movies for this podcast at this point, not to mention the ones we watch recreationally. I guess that's still a thing. So the bar is certainly, I think, despite our best efforts, higher for us to be entertained by some of these. So this is probably fine if you're just a casual, like, hey, let's go hit a horror movie at the theater this October. But of course it came out now. So I'll go like 4 out of 10. Well, you know, rent is pretty high these days. So if you can score yourself a haunted bar basement, then maybe that's where you live in a haunted bar basement.
I mean, from the lady's perspective, like, just don't go down in the basement ever.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
just make live a bar. In this bitchin' giant place with.
Yeah, like, this is your friend's apartment that you shouldn't be able to
afford. Yeah, it's not even a bar. Like, it's a whole social club, it feels like, you know?
It seems like it, yeah.
It's a big old building. That was the one thing that kind of threw me off and gained back into that territory of, like, not wanting to be mean. But, like, I feel like they kind of missed something in the presentation of the property. Because, like, initially I was like, oh, it's like a bunch of factory buildings. And I was like, then the guy's like, no, it's like this, like, residential thing and then this, like, bar. You're like, but what's with the? I'm confused.
But it's like a whole block.
I was super confused because it was so remote that I was like, okay, well, it's obviously all these buildings, like this whole complex. Like, no, it's just sort of like this is one thing, and like it's a lot smaller than it seems like. Did they misshoot the exterior? Because it was like, gosh, I'm really feeling like this is a big ass thing. I'm kind of more up with Josh. There's a lot that I liked about it. I do feel like they had the tools there, just didn't apply them in the way that could have been more workable. But I really liked our girl's motivation and her approach, and kind of she didn't become a wilting flower of sadness of abandoned parent movie, because there's plenty of those and there's plenty of them that are good. But it's like they weren't trying to play up that Hallmarkian sort of thing, which is good. You know, so they kind of just identified it and then moved on, which I thought was great. And then, you know, I really like kind of her approach. You know, any more Peter Mullen would have been better. But the main thing, more than anything else, that I really did like about this is I just really love that this demon must be sitting down there in the third act, sitting down in the basement in the third act, going like, I can't believe they're going to fall for this shit.
Yeah, right.
Like, this is the dumbest. I've got your nose level of trickery that I'm pulling on these guys, and they're falling for it. Like, all right. I mean, shit, I'll ride this fucker out. And then, like we'll do a little switcheroo, and then I guess it'll work. And then it fucking does. And it's like, I kind of enjoy that. I kind of enjoy that the creature sort of was like, it's like, well, whew, oh, cool. All right. Well, back to my to-do list. And it's like off it goes. And it's like, it's great. I think it's really great.
Three more months of plan, but I guess we're good.
Yeah, like it just like they fell right into the damn thing. Like that's a how weird. But yeah, so I mean, like a lot of really good moments, good atmosphere, you know, and those kind of things. But certainly, just sort of like in opportunities to be more bold, it just became kind of more pedestrian. It kind of like robbed it from a lot of its power. But certainly, enough in there that I liked, and I do like the idea of using, because I'm a very rulesy person, so like I like it when rules sort of get used against somebody where they just are not thinking clearly. It's like, you know, like the idea of like being in the woods and there's like some like hungry bear kind of like trying to protect their kids, and you would say out loud to yourself, well, it's not going to attack me. It's not going to attack me. I have kids at home. Sort of like, this is like, it's like, no man, that's not how it works. And so I did enjoy that there's a bit of darkness to that, and I really appreciated that quite a bit. So yeah, I'm gonna be up with Josh. I'm gonna say like in between six and six and a half. Six and six and a half.
Would you dare say six and a quarter?
I will, god damn it. Six and a quarter. Well, they didn't mention this in the TripAdvisor review.
Again.
Again.
So incomplete.
That would have been a great theme if we'd pulled that together.
Beautiful. Let's see. Given the lateness of the hour, I don't think we should dig into it, but I will say, yes, Abigail is a blast, and you should see it.
Agreed.
Yeah, go see Abigail.
And I believe it's available to rent digitally right now. Digitally,
I think you might be
prior to rent, one of the two. But yeah, it's a hoot and a half. If you enjoyed Ready or Not, and then you got to see this. If you saw this and really enjoyed it, and you've not seen Ready or Not, my God, what are you doing with your life? Because Ready or Not fucking rocks, and Samara Weaving is the best. And so yeah, it's yeah. So if you can enjoy that kind of that genre of thing, then this is your thing, and go seek it out, because it was a lot of fun, and just nonsensical. It's just, I think we said at the time, but like, and I will say about certain things here and there, that like its only goal in life is to make you happy.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, there's certain things like Fall Guy. I felt like Fall Guy was that way too.
Yeah.
Like, Fall
Guy is the one where it's like ruled. Yeah.
It's yeah, Carter and Mo were watching it yesterday. And they were losing their mind how much they loved it. So
it's so really much fun. Agenda. It's yeah. whole. Its whole job, its whole goal in life is just to make you happy. It's just to be entertaining and make you happy. And that's it. And again, that's its whole goal. And it's like, so Abigail is in that, not the same genre, but like the same kind of area. But yeah, if you're not going to see Fall Guy, definitely see that, because it's so terrific. And so is Abigail.
I also love that Catherine Newton was Lisa in Lisa Frankenstein. And now she's an Abigail that has a kind of a Dracula thing going on. And if we can just get her now into a movie with a wolf man and a movie with a mummy, she can be the like Nick Fury of the Dark Universe. And that'll make me happy, because she's a great character. I'm always happy to see her in anything. So that's what we want. We want the Catherine Newton cinematic universe. Let's get on that shit. Now show me why Detective Pikachu is still in that same universe, and make me believe it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that reminds me, just so real fast, I'll leave you with this, that as far as that part of the stuff goes, I watch a lot of random stuff on YouTube and I will often fall asleep because I'm stubborn, and I'll be like, well, I'll be awake for a little while longer, and then my body goes, no, you're not, and then you fall asleep and you wake up and it's just gone on to whatever it's gone on to. But I'll watch a lot of things. 360 Attractions is one of them. They do a lot of like ride-throughs on various dark rides and amusement park rides from around the world, like in Germany and Austria and Hong Kong and various other places. And they're really cool. I think they're neat. I love amusement park technology, and I think it's really fascinating stuff. But oftentimes I'll fall asleep. And so the other night I was watching something, and then I just and collapsed. And then I woke up at like 3 something in the morning, and it kept going like it does. But it was showing the new Peter Pan ride at Disney Sea in Shanghai in China. And it's like, and so it's all the characters, like the Lost Boys and Peter Pan, but they're all speaking in Mandarin. Oh. And so I woke up at 3 something in the morning and I went like, blinky, blinky, blinky.
Dream.
And then I'm like, what is it? And then Peter Pan speaking Chinese. And I'm like, whoa, whoa. Then it's like, took me a minute to kind of reorient myself. No pun intended. And then I look at the bottom, like, oh, it's the Peter Pan ride at Disney Sea in Shanghai. Like, ah, okay. But for about 10 seconds, I was like, why is Peter Pan speaking Chinese? Like, what is happening right now? And it's like, maybe I should have gone to bed earlier. That probably would have been smarter.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Out of 10. No.
Out of 10, yeah.
We'll take a quick moment and then we'll be right back with Steph. And also thanks. So for next week, we've got three movies in very different subgenres. So this will be fun. We've got Disappear Completely. That's on Netflix. And that was something that came out of a film festival last year. And we have Villains on AMC. It's got Bill Skarsgård and Micah Monroe in it. And I've never heard of it, which means it's probably not that good. But we're going to watch it. There will be two interesting things in that movie, at least. Then we're also going to watch Arcadian with Nicolas Cage. That was getting some buzz, and that is a rental on Amazon Prime. And for extra credit, you can watch Hundreds of Beavers, because we're going to do that too. Yeah. And I've been Josh, and cool. I say bye. Oh,
yeah. There it is.
No better, like, shave it a haircut, shave it a haircut.
And yeah, we will also be watching a short for next week. It is called Down Here. And we'll be on our website, which is horrorshowhotdog.com. And you can look at other episodes and see what we've ranked and rated in the past on that. Or you can click on the little link and send us an email if you have shit you want to tell us. And all that being said, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time. And I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Dunn. This is Charlie Dunn in Austin. When you said the name of the short, my brain just got completely like miswired and haywired, because my brain just kept wanting to do the Adam Duritz voice, like saying the title of the
Down here. We always like, stand up straight.
And the movie is shorter than a feature length. I was like, God, shut up, brain. You're not doing anybody any favors. So that's what happened. So I had something else I was going to say, and now it's completely gone because of that nonsense. Otherwise, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. Think about how you will stylistically eat a hot dog, I guess. And then we'll be back at you before you know it. Oh, very, very last thing. Coming up in June is Chattanooga. Chattanooga Film Festival is happening third week of June, June 22nd, June 20th to 28th, somewhere in that ballpark. They've released the lineup and unlike other festivals that I will not mention, they seem to have actually put some real effort into their virtual component in terms of what they've programmed, what there's going to be available, all that stuff. And the Chattanooga people are great. They're really nice to deal with. And so anyway, they put out their lineup and the virtual stuff. It's very varied and all kinds of interesting things that seem to be in there. And they seem to put some real effort into what they're doing. So those badges are still available, but according to them, they're cranking along here. So hop, skip, and a jump, and it'll be time for Chattanooga again, amazingly. So keep that in your back pocket. In the meantime, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we will talk towards you before you know it. All right, see you later. Bye.